Okay, we're all geeked out. I think this is our stopping point.
Yeah, I think so.
All right. Fun, John. Let's do it again tomorrow night.
Okay, man.
All right, and up next, that guy, all foxed up, all by himself. And in the meantime, here's the late, great Lowell George reminding you to...
To you know, what we use on stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see,
yeah,
the numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board, 11,
oh,
11,
and most of
11,
the amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes, you're going to be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up,
yeah,
all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
Welcome to Conversation Radio's Lean, Mean, and Green Show right here on the Horn. It's Foxed Up with John Fox, where we turn the conversation to conservation. Foxed Up is brought to you by B1 Louder Productions in Sydney, Australia, and CityNet, citynet.net. B1 Louder by ringing 877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 877-443-2366. Or use your free minutes by dialing direct 304-658-5453. Yeah. Host, the ranting, head-banging hippie, John Fox.
All right. Hello, everyone. It's been a long time since we did one of these. Welcome to Foxed Up here on the Head On Radio Network. What has it been, like 2 weeks since I did my last show? Almost three? Ah, bloody phone lines. The actual phone line died. I mean, dead. You know, dusted. Not to be heard. Started out where it sounded like someone was frying a country breakfast on the other end. And then it just kind of like went completely out. And it took so long to get it fixed because we've had some incredible rains this year. It's the first La Nina in many years. And Queensland and Northern New South Wales have been getting hammered, absolutely hammered. And after the scheduled fix appointment was rescheduled for like the third time, I started getting a bit, shall we say, upset. And my provider, who has no control over the actual phone line, because that's handled by Telstra, the monopoly, had, get this, 500,000 line faults backlogged in this state alone. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. And so, obviously, they had, where places had been, David's saying that Jim severed my phone line. if only he was that clever. So they finally got around to it. But I can just imagine where the floods were had actually been taking place, that, you know, entire exchanges must have gone down, and they had, you know, must have just been really having to focus on, you know, problems that affected, you know, hundreds or thousands of people before getting down to little old me. So, sorry, Bob. So it's really good to be back. I can't even tell you. There'd been so much going on, and to not be on air was depressing. And so I'm really, really happy to be back. And I'm back on the eve of what is going to be a monumental day in Australia. We're going to get into it a little bit today, which is the Australian government is finally going to say, I'm sorry to the stolen generations of the Aboriginal nation. And for those of you that might not have been listening to the horn section, there was, up until the 1970s, the White Australia policy, which is basically to breed, this is the wording, the blackness out of the Aboriginals, because they were impure, you see. And so children were taken from their families. It was just absolutely, you know, it would have made Hitler gasp what they actually had in legislation in this country. And so for years, governments refused to apologize. And a lot of the fear came from the concept that, you know, there would have to be, you know, it'll be, once you say you're sorry, they'll want money. And some of that's basically true. But however, Prime Minister Rudd says that there will be no compensation fund. He'd rather, you know, use funds to help bring the living standards and the life expectancies and the health care and the education of members of the Aboriginal nation, to start bringing them up to the same level as the white population. And so I know it's having to tread very, very lightly. So, you know, and the opposition says, well, we're not so sure about using the word sorry, because there's negative connotations to sorry. Well, you know, get over it. That's what an apology is. And it's not, you know, there's been arguments in the past, you know, why should today's generation apologize for the actions of the past? That's not it either. It has to do with a government apologizing for its policy. And the symbolism will, I believe, and I think most Australians believe, will make great gains in healing the rift in this country between the Aboriginal people and the invaders. Because, I mean, this was their land, and we have made a bloody mess of it. And we made a bloody mess of them, too. And there are people on the right that'll, you know, poo-poo me saying this, but I'm, you know, I make no apology. Deal with it. Just deal with it. So tomorrow, Prime Minister Rudd is going to, as his first major action as Prime Minister, is going to make a speech apologizing to the Aboriginal nation and the stolen generations. And I think this is a wonderful thing. Now, there's a whole lot of whining and bitching and moaning from all over the place that, you know, being that he's been talking about this since before the election, why doesn't he have the wording done yet? Well, you know, I mean, he's been in negotiations with different Aboriginal leaders and whatnot, and, you know, our election was only in November. They only took Parliament, you know, in the last 2 months, and they only actually seated Parliament today. And for the first time in Australian history, federal Parliament was opened with an Aboriginal welcome, which I think is just fantastic. I think it's just awesome. And even though Bob outdid me with his selection of track, with the Elton John song, which was brilliantly picked, today's track of the day, I decided to go and grab something from one of my favorite bands. It's not about the Aboriginals in any way, shape, or form. However, the track is just called Words. And I think that, you know, all this debate has been all about the wording of the apology. And so I thought that this bit of what I would consider acoustimetal just kind of symbolized sonically to me the fight over words. So without further ado, from Days of the New 3, Words. Roll it, Bob. I so reckon that's got to be what was going through Kevin Rudd's head over the last few weeks as he was preparing for this momentous event, saying, I hope I can make this right. And I hope he can, too. It's been a little bit of a form of wedge politics, this thing, and the now opposition isn't used to being an opposition, and they don't really like the wedge too much. Too bad. You had 11 years to do this, and you didn't. Good on labor. And the fact that they haven't released it for you to go through with a fine-tooth comb and try and rip apart for days before the actual event, tough luck, you bastards. But I hope tomorrow it ends up being what it needs to be, which is a sincere turning point in relations between the imported population and the indigenous population. So with that, we'll move on for a bit, and I'll come back and get into a little bit more of how this has all been kind of coming together and the squabbles and fights. But at the moment, we have our good friend David from Maine on the line. How are you, David? Long time no speak.
Yes, I thought I'd call in regarding your opening debut tonight again. Hello?
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah, sorry, man. Sorry. Yeah. Well, yeah, it's good to be back. It's so good to be back. I was silenced for 2 weeks. I think I was driving other people crazy going, get back on the air, you're talking too much.
I just wanted to get your thoughts on the that thing that I was talking about with regarding AdSense. And
very interesting. I hadn't really thought about it from that angle, and I haven't had a chance to check out the links that you sent because I was getting ready to come on air. However, I like the idea of taking their money for us, and the fact that it's the click throughs that actually cost them the most when someone actually clicks through a link. And we've had situations where I've had people email me saying, why are we seeing an advertisement for an Ann Coulter book on the horn? Well, when someone has on the show that day in a post or a page that they're doing something about something that Ann Coulter said,
right.
Well, AdSense goes through keywords on particular pages and will try and bring up related content. And, I saw some right-wing books come up, here and there. But it's the way this whole keyword system, it's a bit random, and you can get kind of anything depending on how they've assigned keywords to their ads and how keywords, because we use a blogging application, and aside from the keywords that I particularly set out for the site, it also generates for each individual post and page keywords pulled from the content.
Right. Go ahead.
There's a little bit of a randomness factor, and I'm always reading on search engine optimization, which is all what this kind of stuff falls into. Mm-hmm. And it's also very much a black box technology. They don't really tell you how it works, because especially Google, if they told you how they decided on page ranking, it would be automatically exploited, and it changes all the time. And so, sometimes you can feel like you've done everything right to get your page up to number one, but it might not work because of so many other sites using the same keywords, how long they've been on, how long the domain is registered for into the future also has some effect on it. But this idea of maybe finding a way to keyword load the site so that we do get, and also looking into how because you can do some stuff with AdSense as well inside their system.
Right.
And I have to say that I haven't played with it that much. There's so many things to handle. when it comes to running the blog and doing shows and whatnot. It's one of the reasons why I use some of these automated systems to, you know, for keywords from content, just to save time, to make sure that new things are going, are you know, that the keywording stays current. I'm going to look into this to see how maybe we can pull some of these ads from the Republican campaigns and get viewers, you know, surfers to go and click on them, go and clear, and then maybe give them some instructions. Click on it, go and clear out all your cookies, and click on it again.
I see one disadvantage to this, and it's kind of funny and humorous at the same time. A lot of people are going to get carpal tunnel hitting the ad button. but there is an alternative to it, and I think you know what probably what I'm going to say about it is there needs to be you need to set up a where's bot, and maybe now I don't know if anyone's ever thought about this. If you have a used computer running in the background, and you're running on a DSL line or a cable line, and you can run another computer, you could technically, I know this is thinking along gangster lines, but you could technically run a bot that just keeps clicking the ad over and over again. Kind of like the auto dialers of the telephone.
Yeah. I do have a feeling, though, AdSense and Google have some pretty good protections when it comes to avoiding that kind of thing, because their terms of service are pretty clear about abusing click-throughs. And, you know, the way the links are generated, they'll be regenerated differently every time the page loads. So, you know, I could see it being done, but doing it and not being found out would be the trickier part. And, you know, if AdSense went and shut me down in 6 weeks because of something like this, it wouldn't really bother me because we've hardly ever made a cent off AdSense.
Right.
Just because of the way that it's organized, and you have to kind of get through a certain amount in a month before you get actually paid, and it's, you know, it's all a little bit, you know, when some investment comes where I can hire an SEO guy, and we actually go and are able to go and afford to do advertising on other websites and really increase traffic.
What you could do, you could run it through, since you were saying about that, and I was thinking about the same lines too, but you could run it through an anonymous 2 web server where it goes to an anonymizer, and it wouldn't, when it'd be running through a bot, you see, it would go through like 2 or 3 different servers, and it would have a bit of time delay, but you wouldn't just have somebody having to click it over and over again.
Oh, absolutely.
So I think there's a way that anyone can do it without, you know, being in trouble or getting banned from AdSense or something like that. I mean, if it comes down to, see, that's my idea of guerrilla fundraising. If when it comes down to the wire like that, do what you can, basically.
Oh, absolutely. I have no problem with it, really. Pardon me, really. You know, they've played enough dodgy games with, you know, blocking voter phone lines and other weird and dodgy things that, you know, if we can, you know, not necessarily steal, but funnel off a few dollars of their, you know, AdSense campaigning, and even if it makes them go, well, we got an awful lot of hits from this head on Radio Network, let's go have a look at these guys and have them go, what the?
Right.
For just the comical relief, it would be worth it.
Another thing is that it would only be, you'd have a specific time window since the political campaign, so you have till November to do it. And who knows, you might be able to get some serious fundraising in that time.
Yeah, I think it's definitely something to try. Especially, I haven't had a chance to have a look at what the keywords are. if they're innocuous enough, you know, then, you know, why not? Why the hell not? Because that, I mean, that is part of the things like AdSense are, where, you know, you're not paying to advertise on a particular blog. It's part of a pool, you know. And so, hey, you know, if it works, it works. If it's my, if you can find a flaw to exploit, do it. We're you know, we got enough problems with the media, you know, declaring our horse race for us, and, you know, so many other issues, the voting machines that still haven't been fixed and everything else. We're up for the fight of our lives just to even get those who, you know, who should rightfully get in. So, you know, I mean, Bob and I were talking earlier about, you know, Edwards, you know, being having to step out because he couldn't get enough oxygen to even get on air, compared to Obama and Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're going to basically run on a bastardized version of his platform, and also, you know, Dennis Kucinich as well. I mean, I particularly, you know, when the whole field's open, you know, Kucinich was my man. Edwards was number two.
I
always knowing
that.
You know, always knowing that Kucinich was always the outside shot. But if it's really, you know, if it's really an open and fair system, yeah, you go and you vote for, you know, in the early days until it gets round down, who you actually like, not who you think can win, because that can help drive the platform of whoever is decided down the road can be the one to best win, which I think we're seeing some of that when it comes to the effect of Edwards on the Obama and Clinton campaigns.
I agree with you on that. And one other thing I wanted to mention that I didn't get a chance for, I don't know, but I did send it to you. Did you get a chance to look at the HEMA movie?
I actually, I think it was the day after you sent me that, was when my connection went kaputsky. And so I haven't actually gotten back. I do want to check that out, though. I still have the links and all, and I will get to it. But as you can imagine, being offline for 2 weeks for someone like me, I'm still swamped. I'm still digging out from it. You know, I have a web business, and, you know, it was kind of, you know, I came back and, you know, telling all of my hosting clients, going, no, I didn't die and everything's fine.
Right. Well,
how have you been?
Yeah, I've been all right. I just like to tell people a little bit about the movie, and then
go for it.
And then, okay, well, HEMA is an evocative type of really a spiritual film about the band Sigur Rós. And I don't know if you're familiar with them, John, but Sigur Rós is based out of Iceland, and the only known Iceland import we know from, or export, or whatever, is Björk.
Yeah, who I dig.
She's the most well-known. Mm-hmm. But what Sigur Rós did was unique. They had success. They've sold millions of records, by the way, just so people know. But they did it on their own terms. They sing in Icelandic, and they did not want to bow down, because what people don't understand is the pressure to westernize your music is so immense in every single radio market, it's ridiculous. But what Sigur Rós wanted to prove was, from the very beginning, they wanted to prove that they could connect to an audience singing Icelandic dialect, and the people would be responsive from all over the world. And that's really what's happening right now. I think they've sold over, like, close to 10 million records.
I've heard there's similar things that happen that go on in France as well. I saw something not long ago on the ABC, I think, where there is this huge French rock scene where they're all singing in French, and that is kind of the whole community has said, you know, has fought this, you know, translating into English, you know, westernizing. And the music's phenomenal. It's great. And because they're singing in their native tongue, there is something so much more kind of honest and impacting about it than when you go and translate. You know, I would think it would have to be much easier to write in your own tongue, even if you're fluent in, you know, which most Europeans are a lot more fluent in English than the Americans are in any other language other than, you know, our bastardized version of English. So they're not the only ones, and I think it's great that they've had such success. And I did get to check out a couple of the tracks that were up there before I got knocked offline. And the stuff is really great, and I will play some of it. I do have to check out that film, because the film tells their story, doesn't it?
What's really great about this film is a lot of people wouldn't do this, and that's what separates them from Sigur Rós. But what they do is they actually go back to Iceland. They've been traveling the world, and I guess you could call them like the U2 of Iceland if you really want to think about it that way. And what they do is they want to see the response of different places they play in Iceland. So they play an outdoor festival. They play like a little townhouse. They play like a little country house farm. They play on the Icelandic fields, and in a vacant field, and what's about to happen is really miraculous. Is like days before. This place is about to be flooded with water, and they tell you this story. See, that's another thing that would interest you. They tell the story about what's happening with Iceland right now, where a lot of people wouldn't know, and you see it documented on film, and you see the citizens, and they tell you the same thing, like, and you have certain activists who say, I don't understand why they want to flood this area, and they get into that. And again, what's really unique about it is, in the film, they're not even sure who's going to come out to see them play, because they've been around the world, but they don't know, can they just set up anywhere, and how many people will show up. And what's really amazing is you see a universal age spread across, like, we're talking 8-year-olds to, like, 80-year-olds in Iceland. And it doesn't matter how crazy they get, because a lot of Sigur Rós's stuff is post-rock mixed in with a lot of Icelandic type of dialect and mysticism, and also a lot of layered instrumentation. They mix it with a lot of another thing they do that's unique is they mix with string octets. And see, that's different, because a lot of people, you know, they go for the string quartet, or sometimes they just go for, hey, I'll have a violin player on the side and have her, you know, dressed up real dapper, and there you go. But
I'll have the keyboard player do a thing with an arrangement that I bought off of some composer.
Right, but what's so great about the film, John, when you see it, and I know Bob's listening, and Bob, you got to see this film. You got to put it in your schedule, like at the top, okay? So when I recommend something like that, and I say stop the train and go watch the film, I'm serious about it. I'm serious about it. I don't do that often, but this is one of those films where I say, Bob, you got to see it, because how it's going to influence you and how it's going to inspire you, I don't know. But I do know this. Sigur Rós has probably impacted so many people's lives across the country. And here's the crazy thing about it. Nobody really knows what they're singing. You know, they named their album after, like, parentheses. And when they released it, they called the album Parentheses, but it really wasn't that. It was just like a symbol. So they
right.
Messed around with things like that. They mess around with strings. They have great sense of harmonies and guitars. And like I said, they have a lot of vibraphone parts in their music.
All right.
It's really, really resonant. And here's the thing that's really, really weird about the whole film when you see it. I won't say, they're almost like an embodiment of the rise of Iceland. So they like channel the spirits. I know I'm talking a little bit out there, but they like channel the spirits of Iceland, and they have an amazing story. Their first album only sold 313 copies to date, and then they went from that. The second one sold 1 million.
Well, so, but, I mean, you're not so out there though, man, because you know, the thing about music is that it should be an embodiment of, you know, it's like the mathematical representation of someone's spirituality when you really get down to it, when it's really and truly honest. Because I've said it before, music is nothing but math, and I'm also told to tell you that Bob says 10-4.
10-4.
But, you know, the yogi back in the 60s, you know, said, I might not understand what Bob Dylan's singing about, but I get it.
Right.
That's it.
That is the point. That is the focus that Sigur Rós want to do it. It's almost like a ha-ha, we told you so type movie, too, because they really were told in the beginning, you can't sing in Icelandic dialect and nobody understands. Even the younger generation doesn't speak it that well. How are they going to connect to it? And what they really did connect to, everyone around the world, and if you look at their numbers, it's pretty impressive for, like I said, a band from Iceland. When, if you look at Bjork, I'm not knocking Bjork. I think she's incredible. But how many songs did Bjork sing in Icelandic? Not many.
Oh, no. And but I mean, her kind of road is fairly different. She was kind of shot into an international market.
Right.
At a very young age. And, you know, her husband's, I believe, English. So, I mean, you know, there's other factors involved. And, I mean, I just have respect for her when it comes to just music as an art form and the creation factor. I have the utmost respect for her. And some of the best articles I've ever read in recording magazines about producing records and interviews with producers and recording engineers have been doing Bjork records, because no matter how much you think she's all into the technology and it's so polished, the process is extremely raw.
Oh.
There's one entire album of hers where she didn't go, the vocals that are on the album weren't, you know, in the ISO booth with the, you know, $1 million Neumann. She was actually in the control room with the speakers blaring with a handheld Shure 58. And the performances were so hot that they used, I think, all but one track. Those original, what were really guide vocals, feeling it out vocals.
Right.
And then it was up to the engineer to tidy them up as far as, you know, trying to deal with the bleed and things like that, so that it didn't affect the rest of the production, because there might have been instruments that were in the things that she sang to that might not have been on the actual final mix. So, you know, there would have been, you know, technical hurdles to get through on the engineer's point of view, but they all talk about how awesome it is to work with her, because it's like really, you know, seat of your pants kind of stuff. And you know, she gets the vibe on something, and she's just like, okay, we got to do this, we got to do that, and they might not get what she's on about, but as soon as they do it, it's like, oh, right, I get it now. And I think that is such a great example of the beauty of creation. And so why I am really interested in watching this film, and I will do that in the next week, I promise. I will get it downloaded, and I will watch it, and I will get the discography as well. But I'm gonna have to tie you up here, because I got a few things I want to cover before I get out of here with this stuff that's happening tomorrow with the apology to the Aboriginal Nation tomorrow, because I think it's huge. But always good to talk to you, man, and we'll talk to you next week about this very subject once I've had a chance to view and listen.
All right, John.
You take care of yourself, my friend. Always good to talk to you. All right, folks, that was David from Tennessee. Always got something interesting, and I will be getting to that. So we're going to take a quick break here, folks, and I'm going to come back and give you a little bit more on this whole apology thing that's going to be happening in, not even a whole day. So stick around. You'll listen to Foxed Up here on the Head On Radio Network, and we'll be right back.
Dark time. the hill, sang the little nightingale. Evening star led me out the door to come home no more. Crazy in the headgear, I got the windows rolled down tight. Crazy dreams haunt me, no matter where I sleep tonight.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Tune in to Foxed Up this Thursday, midnight Eastern, where we'll take a look at singer Sheryl Crow. Find out about her experience working for Michael Jackson.
Michael is, you know, he's not like every other performer, and I think everyone has to sign a contract when they work with him, not to write a book, you know, about what goes on behind the scenes or whatever.
She'll also talk about her problems with Walmart. So be there this Thursday, midnight Eastern, on Foxed Up, right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
All I want to do is have a little fun before I die. There's a man next to me out of nowhere.
This is Billy Shears, and hey, thanks for lending an ear.
Everyone loves to listen to music, but have you ever stopped to think about why it's great for kids to learn to play music? Hi, I'm Darius Rucker from Hootie the Blowfish. These days, it seems people focus way too much on the economics of school music instead of an amazing positive effect it has on kids. It's such a thrill for a child when he or she gets the first instrument or masters a simple part on the flute or performs a showstopper with a school chorus. And there's so much music out there to play and listen to. When kids learn to appreciate a show tune, a Beethoven symphony, or an opera, in addition to what they hear on the radio, it only opens their young minds to the diversity of the world around them. Make sure your kids learn to love music. Support your school music program.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, and the National Anthem Project, the campaign to restore America's voice through music education. March is Music in Our Schools Month.
Everybody, welcome back to Foxed Up here on the Head On Radio Network. First show back after an unexpected pause. Anyway, more on this on this coming apology to the Stolen Generations. From the City Morning Herald, there's a piece today saying Rudd pleads for calm on apology. The Prime Minister, Kevin Rudd, has urged Brendan Nelson, this is the opposition leader, to show restraint after the opposition leader grew impatient with Labour's refusal to release the text of the apology to the Stolen Generations until late today. The apology due to be delivered about 9 a.m. tomorrow will not be revealed until after 5 p.m. today when it is tabled in Parliament. That's about 20 minutes from now. Dr. Nelson, who has already written his speech without seeing the words, said yesterday that the process has become chaotic. If Mr. Rudd wants to unify Australia to bring our nation together, the most important person he should be negotiating with is me. That's a little self-centered, don't you think? It's about the Aboriginal people. But, yeah, I understand his point. We're 2 days away from this. For goodness sake, he should be sitting down with me and saying, these are the words which we propose. What do you think? Mr. Rudd rang Dr. Nelson late yesterday, but the wording was still not finished. I mean, when you're writing something like this, first of all, he is the prime minister. I think he kind of has the right to try and get this wording right. Now, and it's got to be excruciating. It continues on saying, Labor has been negotiating with indigenous groups and having the word scrutinized by lawyers to make sure there is no avenue for compensation claims. And this is where it's got to be really dicey. Mr. Rudd reminded Dr. Nelson to remember who our audience is here. He said that because the apology was being made by Parliament, the process must be respected and the words be tabled first. This cannot happen until late because most of the day will be taken up by the opening ceremony and other official duties to mark the new Parliament. So in other words, they had a really full table of all the stuff, and you know, of actually getting Parliament started for this new term, this new government. And you know, they weren't going to be able to get to it till 5 o'clock today. So if they started like 9 o'clock this morning, this has been a long work day as far as politicians go. It continues on. It says, Mr. Rudd and Dr. Nelson will each speak tomorrow morning. Mr. Rudd is also writing his own speech, helped by a conversation at the weekend with Lorna Fajo, a Northern Territory woman in her 80s who was taken from her mother as a child. Her daughter was in turn taken from her. We were really snatched and taken away. Why did they separate me from my mother? Said Miss Fajo, who is in Canberra for the apology. She told Channel 9, the hurt has been so deep, so very deep, the government wants to apologize. I accept the apology. Now, there has been, since I have lived in this great brown land, basically a tent city out in front of Parliament, which has been basically Aboriginal activists looking for the apology. And the front lawn, they lined with a few thousand candles, and there's a picture at news.com.au. Unfortunately, it's a link that I didn't... Oh, no, it might be one of the links that I got to ELO for the show post today. But in candles, they wrote, saying sorry is a good first step or something to that effect. And, yes, it will be the first step in the healing. And even though I think, and it's one of those, what do I know? But I think that, you know, there could have been a compensation fund set up, and it could all have been put away. But to get this thing through at all, just the symbolic portion, took making sure that there was not going to be any avenue for financial compensation. However, states like Tasmania have said that they will set up their own compensation fund. So maybe we'll see this on a statewide level, which can more closely deal with the different tribes. Who knows? But this is something that has been a long time coming. And as I said, from news.com.au, federal parliament has opened with ceremonial welcoming from Aborigines for the first time in its 107-year history. With this welcome comes a great symbolism, the hope of a united nation through reconciliation, Elder Matilda House told the assembled MPs and senators. Prime Minister Kevin Rudd was handed a message stick which told the story of our coming together. The ceremony combined ancient Aboriginal dances, music, song, and more modern dance and performance. At the end, Mr. Rudd and opposition leader Brendan Nelson walked off the stage on either side of Ms. House to the applause of the gathered MPs and senators. Earlier today, Mr. Rudd getting tomorrow's planned apology to the Stolen Generation's right for Indigenous people is his main concern and not politicians. He said a substantial concession already has been made, revealing key elements of the apology to opposition leader Brendan Nelson. We are dealing with a matter here which goes to how we as a nation heal, and that it is best done if we as Parliament can act in unanimity on this question, he told ABC Radio today. But the core part of making sure this apology is effective is to make sure it is done right and proper by Aboriginal people. They are the most important people in this equation today, not politicians, be it the government or the opposition. The government has decided that only Prime Minister Kevin Rudd and opposition leader Brendan Nelson will speak at tomorrow's historic apology in Parliament. Other MPs will be given opportunity later in the parliamentary sittings to have their say. That decision has been criticized by the Nationals, their leader Warren Truss, who said the government was degrading the event. Come on. Now, the Nationals, this is like the country bumpkin right-wing party. And they probably have resisted this whole apology thing more than anybody else. Other MPs will be given... but Mr. Rudd said the government's primary concern was to get the apology right for the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. They are those to whom we are apologizing, he said. Mr. Rudd said he had breakfast with the opposition leader last week, showing him a summary of the core points to be included in the apology. That is virtually unprecedented in terms of how governments historically treat oppositions in this country, he said. And I think that that is absolutely spot on. If this had been Johnny Howard's boys, Labor would have had nothing to do with it. Absolutely nothing to do with it. They would have been shut out and it would have all been me, 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 me. But no. They broke with convention and hopefully started what I think will be now every time a new parliament is seated, that the first thing will be a welcoming by the indigenous people of this country. And this is something that even John Howard was in favor of at public events and has become very, very common, whether you go to a concert, a political rally, a lecture. Wherever the event is held, there will be a welcome or paying honor to the tribe that originally, or the clan, which is probably the better term, the clan that occupied the land originally. So this is all a real long time coming, and I think even with all the infighting and everything else, it will make great strides in healing what has been a poisonous rift between the Aboriginal nation and the Australian nation. And at the moment, until this apology comes through, it will be two separate nations. They can only become one nation until the government officially takes responsibility and says, and makes the apology for the policies of the government. Now, this Labor government had nothing to do with it. The previous Howard government had nothing to do with it, even though John Howard, before he got into federal politics, talked about how he thought the White Australia policy was a good idea. So it's... we won't know any of this until tomorrow. I wonder if February 13th, which is what the date will be here when this all takes place, if this will become a national holiday. Will it become the National Sorry Day? I would hope so. I would hope that we would every year remember and reinforce the great step that is going to be taken tomorrow. And I don't doubt that there aren't going to be attempts for compensation. And I honestly don't have that much of a problem with it. The invading population, which technically includes me, have made out like gangbusters by raping this land, which was cared for much better by the indigenous people. It's going to be a big day tomorrow, and I will be trying to capture as much audio as I can from the speeches and all tomorrow, so I can play them tomorrow night, because I think I have a feeling that the official apology and Kevin Rudd's speech will be of great value. And how the opposition reacts will be interesting. I hope that Dr. Nelson kind of copes with the way this has been used a bit as a wedge issue against them. But how does it feel, Knight? How does it feel? And I know it's really hard being in opposition for the first time in 11 years. And it's going to take some getting used to for both sides. I mean, I still, you know, kind of snap myself, you know, too, when on the news, you know, they say, you know, Deputy Prime Minister, you know, and I realize it's Labor. You know, we lived under the same mob for so long that it's taking a great amount of time to get used to the concept that the political landscape of this country has changed dramatically. And there's going to be a lot of changes taking place over the next year or two. However, I don't think that it's going to be so extreme that it's going to run anything off the rails. I do think that Kevin Rudd is kind of middle of the road enough that he's not going to do anything insane. In fact, at the moment, he's dealing with increased inflation and interest rates that are the after effect of the previous government. Now we get to see what he does about it. And he only has a certain amount of time that he can lay the blame on the previous government. See what happens with his first budget and everything else. But it's going to be a fascinating next few months, couple of years. And it all started today. And the big first symbol is tomorrow. And I cannot wait. I'm so looking forward to it. And Aboriginal people are flocking to Canberra for the event. And the one thing I don't like is that the Aboriginals won't be speaking in Parliament tomorrow. I kind of wish that they were, but maybe they're taking this as a parliamentary action. So it's sitting members of Parliament. I don't know. We'll see. But anyway, folks, thanks for being with us today. It's so wonderful to be back. Thanks to Cold River Mountain Watch for their support. Thanks to Scott Berry at B1 Ladder Productions for the music. Thanks to Bob Kincaid for producing today. Thanks to ELO and all the mods and our bloggers, the news ninjas who keep everything running on the web. We couldn't do this stuff without you. So as we say here on Fox Up, geez, it's been so long, I forget what I do here. Be good, be green. We'll see you tomorrow.
If ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, I would tell you that sometimes it's easier to desire and pursue the attention and admiration of 100 strangers than it is to accept the love and loyalty of those closest to me. And I would tell you that sometimes I prefer to look at myself through someone else's eyes, eyes that aren't clouded with the tears of knowing what an I can be, as yours are. ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, I might be able to listen in silence to your concerns, rather than hearing everything as an accusation or an indictment against me. And I would tell you that sometimes I use sex to avoid communication.
This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good evening, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. It's sort of a week in review today. I certainly don't mind if you want to call in and talk about anything. There is a lot to talk about, both in election news and the economy.